had provided him a good place to live at a fair price. He knew that he had an obligation to fix things that he damaged, so he fixed the front door and continued to pay the rent until he moved out. Being firm and fair with tenants who test you. Tenants will test your system. If you give them a discount for paying by the first of the month, they will bring or mail the discounted amount into you so that you receive it on the second of the month. If you accept it and still let them take the discount, the next month it will come on the fifth and then the tenth and so on. If you give someone a financial incentive for good behavior, don't reward bad behavior. Be nice, but smile like your banker would smile if you tried to talk him out of a late charge on your monthly payment. Tell such tenants that you hope that they pay on time next month so that they can qualify for the discount. Collect the full rent on the appointed day, or you are training them to pay late. Move in and move out inspections. Likewise, tenants will test you and ask you to do repairs that are their responsibility. When they do, be fair but firm. When tenants move into a house, I give them a detailed inspection sheet, which I ask them to fill out and return to me within 3 days of taking occupancy. I want it back quickly so that I have an accurate record of the condition of the house. I already have on file the previous tenant sheet, and now I can compare them. The new tenants are doing the exit inspection for the old tenants, and they will be thorough. After the 3-day period, I hold the tenants accountable for any damage to the property. If they clog up the plumbing or break something, it is their responsibility to handle the maintenance call and repair on their own without involving me. If they do involve me, they will lose their discount and still may be responsible for the repair if they are at fault. Consistency and control, the keys to effective management. A good property manager does not have to think a lot. He just needs to have a good set of policies and procedures and then follow them. If you find yourself making up a new answer for every tenant question, then you need to think through your policies, write them down, and be consistent with all your tenants. Landlords get into trouble when they treat tenants differently. Establish policies and then stick with them. The secret to being a happy, successful landlord can be summed up in a word: control. Many people who invest in real estate do it because they like to be in control of their investments. Landlords who are miserable have lost control. Their tenants are running the show. Training your tenants. Either you will train your tenants or they will train you. I use the word train here not as in training a pet simply to respond to a command. Rather, tenants will learn what they can expect from you when you respond to their requests or when they test your system of management. Good tenants are looking for fair and responsive landlords. Being fair and responsive will not necessarily cost you money. In fact, if prospective tenants believe that you are both fair and responsive, they are more likely to rent from you. Many landlords are neither. To be in control as a landlord, you need a management system that both you and your tenants understand and that you implement. Like teenagers, tenants will search for boundaries and then test them. As the landlord, you need to set those boundaries clearly. When you are tested, restate the boundaries and be fair but firm in sticking with the rules. Training starts with your first contact with prospective tenants and continues through your entire relationship with them. You set the stage with your rental application and initial interview. After that, your response to requests will train people to either call more often or to handle their own problems. It is important that you have policies, that your policies comply with the law, and that you enforce those policies. In more than 30 years of managing hundreds of tenants and studying other successful landlords, I have established the following rules as policy for renting houses. Use them, and they will save you thousands of dollars and many hours of aggravation. Single-family house management policies. 1. Always get cash or a local cashier's check or money order for the first month's rent and the security deposit. Never accept an old or out-of-town cashier's check. They may have stopped payment on it. 2. Never accept a partial security deposit and allow a tenant to have possession of the house. Prorate the rent and take a full deposit. You cannot evict for non-payment of deposit. 3. Always use an all-inclusive rental agreement with which you are comfortable and understand fully. Never negotiate the agreement with tenants. If they win this negotiation, they will negotiate more. 4. Always take the time to go over the entire agreement with all adults who will be living in the house. Try to interview the entire family. 5. Never discriminate. Treat every tenant and applicant equally and fairly. Do not bend policies because a tenant belongs to a minority. Treat everyone the same. 6. Have a late payment policy and stick with it. When you make an exception, the exception will soon become the rule. 7. Always serve late tenants with notices as soon as they are late. 8. Feeling sorry for tenants doesn't help them or you. Pay them to move out. Take action. Do not confuse business with charity, or you may not have the money to be charitable. 9. Keep good records of all income and receipts. Always give receipts for rent collected in cash. Keep duplicate copies in a receipt book. 10. Respond to tenant requests in a reasonable and businesslike manner. Distinguish between ordinary maintenance and real emergencies. Have a system in place to handle true emergencies. 11. Keep the property in good repair and inspect the outside of a property several times a year to ensure that tenants are taking care of the property. Getting rid of problem tenants. The primary reason to move tenants out of a property before the term is up is that they are not paying rent. Take immediate action when tenants do not pay on time. Deliver to them a 3-day pay or quit, that is, move, notice. It is the first step in the eviction process. Read your state's statutes so that you know in advance what actions you need to take. When tenants receive this prompt response to their non-payment, typically they will pay you. If they don't pay you, the next step is to talk with them, if possible, to see if you can work out a payment schedule that they can afford. Sometimes converting tenants to a weekly pay schedule at a higher rent will make it possible for them to stay in the house. Take the monthly rent and divide it by 4 and have the tenants begin to pay you this new amount every Friday. Since there are 52 Fridays in a year, not 4 times 12 equals 48, you will receive an extra 4 weeks' rent each year for your trouble. If this solution does not solve the problem, offer to return a portion of the security deposit if they move immediately. You can make the offer this way. I can hire an attorney to evict you, in which case you will lose your entire deposit, or I can give you part of your deposit back if you will move out by next Friday. Would you rather I pay you or an attorney? You must make this offer short-term so that if they do not move as agreed, you still have enough deposit to protect you if you have to continue on with the eviction process. It's worth repeating myself and saying that I have had only 6 evictions in managing hundreds of tenants. The secret of having few evictions is a good selection process coupled with an immediate response when a tenant does not pay. An eviction is the most expensive way to move a tenant out. Raising your rents. You cannot raise your rent on an empty house. The first step in raising the rent is having a full house. If you own a dozen full houses, you can constantly test the market by raising one rent each month. If tenants start moving out because they can find a cheaper, comparable house, then stop raising them for a while. Raising your rents a little bit every year is good for you and your tenants. Your costs will go up most years. Your tenants expect some increase. The secret of keeping your tenants long-term is a series of small increases. Consider how a good tenant paying you $1,200 a month would react if you did not raise his rent for 5 years, and then 1 year you jumped at $300 a month. The $300 a month increase may not even catch him up to market rent, but it still will be a shock to him and he may move. This would cost you a good tenant and the tenant a good home. it would be better for you and the tenant to raise his rent $75 every year. Over 5 years, you would actually raise rents more, but your good tenants won't move to avoid a $75 yearly increase in rent. It costs far more than that to move, not to mention the aggravation of moving. Track your tenants and raise their rents a fair amount once a year. If there is a season of the year that tenants hate to move, time your rent increases to fall in that season and fewer will move. If the rental market is soft and you want to keep your good tenants, put a handwritten note on the rent increase letter to call you if they have any questions. If they call and say that they will have to move if you raise the rent, you may decide to leave the rent alone this year to keep a good tenant. During recessions, I have lowered my rents to keep my good tenants. I'd rather be 100% full at 90% of market rent than 10% empty trying to get 100% of market rent. When your houses are full of solid tenants, you can spend your time looking for good deals rather than trying to rent houses. A landlord who tries to squeeze the top dollar in rent out of a lot of his houses will spend a lot of time looking for new tenants. Set your rents slightly below the market. Charge a larger-than-average security deposit, keep your houses in good shape, and you can attract the best tenants in your town. Avoiding landlord burnout. Some landlords enjoy owning property all their life. In fact, owning and managing property is something you can do as long as you want to. Many of my more senior students are well into their 80s and still enjoy managing their money and their property. In doing the research for a book I co-authored entitled Optimal Aging, available at www.optimalaging.com, I found that staying active in managing your financial affairs keeps you young and that you will often make better decisions than those to whom you delegate. Other landlords suffer burnout and sell their property before they benefit from long-term appreciation and debt payoff. There are a couple of keys to avoiding landlord burnout. The first is buying property that attracts long-term tenants who have the same value system that you do. You want to rent to tenants who see themselves as homeowners one day. These tenants will value the house they live in, and they may want a reference from you to either buy a house or to rent another. There are big differences in how people view themselves and others. If you rent to people who are constantly trying to beat you out of the rent, eventually, you will wear out. Another key is avoiding high turnover, high management property. Renting low-income property to tenants who can't afford anything better is a hard way to make a fortune. People who live on the edge of financial disaster are high management tenants. They often cannot pay the rent if they miss even one day's pay. The third key is to buy the right number of properties for you. Set your goals in terms of cash flow and net worth, not in terms of numbers of properties. You may decide that you only need a few properties. Fewer properties mean fewer tenants and less work. Chapter 18. Knowing when to sell and how to sell. The longer you hold a house that is appreciating and producing cash flow, the more money it will make you. However, there are reasons and a time to sell your investments. Before you sell, answer these questions. 1. What is your market doing today? Are properties selling quickly? Is the inventory down and are prices moving up? If so, it's an opportunity to sell your weaker properties. If prices are declining, ask why. Is it because of a significant event that will affect your housing market long term, like a large business or military base closing causing a drop in population? Or is the downturn due to overbuilding or a change in the credit market? If you think it will be many years before prices come back, selling today and buying back in at cheaper prices may be a good decision. But kicking out good tenants and giving up the income is giving up a lot. Before you sell, know your after-tax net. If your houses are in good shape and have long-term tenants, holding through a recession is often a better strategy than trying to sell at the top and buy back at the bottom. 2. What is happening on the streets where you own property? Properties on different streets within a neighborhood are constantly changing. Study each street where you own and determine whether holding for 5 more years is a good plan. Neighborhoods improve and property values increase when landlords or banks sell to owners who then fix up houses. Neighborhoods decline and property values drop when landlords or banks let properties deteriorate. 3. Does your house have a long-term tenant in residence or a record of attracting long-term tenants? If so, it is cranking out cash flow for you. In the long run, your profits from cash flow will often be greater than your profits from appreciation. Rents go up with inflation, just like prices. As my house prices have climbed from $50,000 to $200,000, my rents have increased from $400 to $1,600 on those same houses. The big difference is that I get the rent every month but have to wait until I sell for the appreciation. Said another way, the profits from the rents that I receive today are much more valuable to me than the profit I will receive 10 years from now. 4. Can you refinance today on good terms? I like owning property free and clear, but am also a big fan of monthly cash flow. If I can refinance a loan and increase my cash flow, I do. If you increase your cash flow when you refinance, you reduce your risk from having debt. Debt is risky when you cannot repay it. Refinancing is a great strategy when you can pay off one or more loans with high payments with one new low payment loan. I refinanced one house with a new low interest rate, 30-year loan, and paid off 3 older loans with high payments. My one new loan payment was less per month than my previous payment. Plus, I ended up with 2 free and clear houses. 5. Is your house in rentable shape, and does it operate with reasonable maintenance costs? Most foreclosures and short sales I look at are not in good enough shape to attract a decent tenant. Some landlords are renting houses without getting them into good condition, but I found that when you advertise a nasty-looking house for rent, the tenants you attract look a lot like the house. 6. Is your rental market strong? When we have tenants competing for houses, it is a good time to rent, not sell, your houses. Rents go up in spurts. Remember, you will often make more from the rents than appreciation. 7. Is the house located close to where you live or work? At one time, I owned property in 10 states, and that was an education. I learned that I made more money and spent less time traveling when my properties were in my town. Over the years, I have disposed of everything out of state and now will not buy a house unless it's within a 10-minute drive of my office. Unless you live where no one makes money investing in real estate, learn to invest where you live or move to where it is easier. My favorite Jim Rohn quote is, "Don't wish it was easier, wish you were better." It is not as easy if you live in a higher-priced market, but if you get better, you will make a lot more money than an investor who lives in a low-priced market. Many of my most successful students started with little money in very expensive markets, such as Orange County, California. Today, they own houses worth many times what my houses are worth, and, predictably, their cash flow is higher than mine. It takes far fewer houses to make you rich in an expensive market. 8. Are there some houses that you own today that you want to keep forever? If not, do you want to acquire one or more properties that you will own for the rest of your life? What qualifies a house as one that you want to keep forever? Houses that attract long-term, low-maintenance tenants. Houses that are well-built and have lower-than-average maintenance costs. Houses with taxes and insurance that are in line with the rents. Houses with a low-interest, long-term loan or are free and clear that will produce cash flow even at reduced rents. Houses that are located in neighborhoods that are improving. Good reasons to sell a house. Houses grow old, neighborhoods change, and landlords get tired. Here are some good reasons to sell a house. 1. Neighborhood changing for the worse. Neighborhoods have cycles. When owners sell out and landlords buy many houses in a neighborhood, property values often will drop. Sell when you see this happening. 2. Worn-out house. It costs a lot of money and it takes a lot of time to fix up a house that needs a new kitchen, baths, plumbing, roof, and so on. Most improvements you make only increase the value of a house by a fraction of what you spend. An investment in a new kitchen, one of the best things you can do, will increase the value of the house only by about 75% of what you spend. It is smarter to buy another house in good repair and sell your worn-out house to a buyer looking for a project. There are a lot of buyers in that category. 3. Worn-out landlord. Some landlords enjoy their work into their 80s. It is one job that you can keep for life if you want it. A skilled landlord with 20 properties may work only an hour or two a month. You can delegate all the bad jobs and keep the ones that you like. Should you reach the point where you are not having any fun, consider selling to a family member whom you can teach the business or to another younger investor. See more details below. 4. The house is far away. I obviously prefer to invest in my own backyard. If you own a property in a faraway town, you have to weigh the benefits or cost of holding it until the market improves against selling it now. If you have a loss, you may consider selling it for a loss that could offset the profit you could make from selling another property for a gain. 5. The house loses money. Whenever I find myself with a losing property, I am aggressive about selling it. I'd rather take a loss today and be free to pursue another opportunity than try to squeeze a few more dollars out of a losing investment. It may be a loser because of bad financing or bad construction or bad neighbors. Unless I can fix it quickly and at a cost that makes sense, I sell and buy another, better property. Selling for the wrong reasons. It can be a mistake to sell. Once you have bought a property that makes you money every month, don't sell it unless it is part of your plan. 1. You have an empty house. If it has attracted good tenants in the past, don't sell, hold it. If it does not attract well-behaved, long-term tenants, then selling an empty house is better than selling one with a tenant in it. Tenants are not an asset when you sell because it is not in their best interest. They may have to move. Because of this, they may not cooperate in showing the house, and it may not look its best. Most buyers will not want to move in. 2. No leverage. I have had financial advisors tell me that owning free and clear properties is a terrible idea, and they are right to a point. They say the rate of return is low. What they do not consider is that if you own 10 houses, you can own 5 of them free and clear and 5 with loans, and increase your rate of return with the leverage. Once you have enough property to produce all the cash flow you need, your focus should be to pay off your debt, not borrow more. It is easier to borrow money than to pay it back. If your strategy is to refinance, do it when rates are low. 3. No depreciation. If you own a house long enough, you will run out of depreciation. If the house is in a great neighborhood and making you money, keep it. Would you sell a stock that goes up every year and pays a big dividend? No, you wouldn't. And stocks have no depreciation. If you want more depreciation, buy more property. Don't sell off your winners. 4. Someone wants to buy your house. Someone always will want to buy your best properties. If you are going to sell one, sell your weakest property. When you begin to acquire properties, keep a list with your favorite property at the top and your least favorite at the bottom. If you are married, share this with your spouse and tell your spouse that if he or she ever needs to sell, sell the ones on the bottom of the list first. How to sell. You can use an agent to sell your property or you can sell it yourself. If you have no experience selling, the agent may do a better job. If you learn how to sell property yourself, then you may be able to get as high a price as the agent and save the commission. My favorite way to sell is using lease options as described in Chapter 15. Selling on lease options allows me to sell to a homeowner who is struggling to buy a house, often their first house, and yet sell at a retail price. I sell the house in as-is condition and have the buyer pay the closing cost. This increases my net profit by at least 10%. A student of mine who had accumulated many houses systematically sold his houses one at a time to young investors. He gave these investors a chance to make a profit off their first house while selling at a good price without any advertising or expense. If they did not exercise their option and close, he still owned the house. He could then renegotiate at a higher price and rent or sell to another. Sell to an owner-occupant with seller financing. Owner financing, where your buyer pays you a down payment and then pays you monthly payments until he pays for the house, is similar to selling with a lease option with a few important differences. When you sell a house using owner financing, regardless of the paperwork that you use, you have a sale for tax purposes. That sale can be treated as an installment sale if you qualify. An installment sale allows you to report your profit as you receive it, not all in the first year of the sale. It is important to note that dealer property cannot be sold using an installment sale. Dealer property is inventory. For a builder, it's a house he is building to sell. For a flipper, it is a house he has fixed up and is selling. If you are a builder or flipper, any sale of your inventory does not qualify. This is an important point. You must elect to take an installment sale and file IRS Form 6252. Check with your accountant for details. See IRS Publication 537 for a complete explanation. An advantage to the buyer is lower closing costs and a lower down payment than a bank would require. The seller needs to be able to judge whether the buyer has the income to make the payments. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2010, H.R. 4173, has regulations that apply to those who sell more than one house a year to a homeowner with owner financing. It does not apply to sales to investors. You can sell several houses with owner financing in 1 year to investors. You can sell multiple houses a year to owner occupants, but you must comply with the provisions of this law. Should the buyer stop making payments, be aware of the cost to get the buyer out of the house and out of title. This may require a foreclosure. Foreclosing, like evicting, should be used only as a last resort. It is nearly always cheaper and faster to negotiate with a buyer who can no longer make his payments and to buy out his interest rather than pay an attorney to have him evicted or foreclosed. If you do this, have an attorney or title company prepare the documents. Selling and reinvesting without paying a tax on your gain. If you are going to sell and then invest in other investment real estate, you can defer paying any tax until you sell by making an IRC Section 1031 tax-deferred exchange. Note that the new property must be held for investment. It does not have to be the same type of investment property. You could sell a house and buy a duplex or commercial property or even land that you plan to hold as an investment. The replacement property cannot be your personal residence or a vacation home. If you do an exchange with a related party, certain rules apply. Related parties include, but are not limited to, immediate family members such as brothers, sisters, spouses, ancestors, and lineal descendants. Related parties do not include step-parents, uncles, aunts, in-laws, cousins, nephews, nieces, and ex-spouses. Corporations, limited liability companies, or partnerships in which more than 50% of the stock, membership interest, or partnership interest, or more than 50% of the capital interest or profit interest is owned by the taxpayer, is also considered to be a related party. Related parties who concurrently exchange properties with each other must hold the properties for 2 years following the 1031 exchange. Both related parties will recognize their respective depreciation recapture and capital gain income tax liabilities if either party disposes of its respective property within 2 years after the simultaneous 1031 exchange or transfer. If you plan to use IRC Section 1031 to defer your tax, have the next property that you want to buy identified before you sell. Section 1031 currently requires you to identify your replacement property within 45 days from your first closing and then close on it in 180 days. No extensions are allowed. The first 45 days goes by quickly, so knowing what you want to buy and even having it under contract will improve your chances of completing the exchange. Get good legal and tax counsel before you sign a contract to ensure that your paperwork and strategy comply with the IRS requirements. If you sell, you will owe recapture tax on the depreciation you have taken, which is 25% of the amount of depreciation you claimed. This is called depreciation recapture. Check with your CPA. You can avoid the recapture tax by successfully completing a Section 1031 exchange. If you have properties with large gains, most of your profit is due to appreciation, so the amount of depreciation you have to recapture will be less significant. If you buy a house for $100,000 and hold it until you sell it for $300,000, you will only have depreciation to recapture on the part of the $100,000 that you have depreciated. In addition to not paying taxes, an exchange forces you to reinvest your profits into another property. Keeping your investment capital invested continuously makes a huge difference in your net worth in the long run. Accept a smaller house as a down payment. If the house you are trying to sell is a move-up home, then it is likely that the buyers will already be owners of a smaller house. An excellent way to make a deal is to accept their existing house as a down payment on the house you are trying to sell. If the buyers like your house, they need to sell their house before they can buy yours. Car dealers discovered the solution to the same problem years ago. You don't have to sell your old car before you buy a new one. It is easy. They will take your old car on a trade. Do they make money on your old car? Sure. You can make money taking a house on a trade. Remember, the seller is thinking that they will have to pay a commission and perhaps reduce their price to get their house sold. If you simply accept it as a down payment, they can avoid the trauma of having people walk through their house making disparaging remarks before receiving a lowball offer. If you sell your more expensive house at a retail price and accept the buyer's house as a down payment, you will make a profit. Your house for sale price, $225,000. Your cost in the house is $180,000. Buyer's house at market value, $140,000 minus 7% equals $130,200. Buyer's loan balance, $100,000. You accept their $30,200 equity as a down payment on your $225,000 house. They get a new loan for $194,800, $225,000 less their $30,200 equity. You get their house subject to their loan and $194,800 in cash at the closing. If you have a loan on your house, you will pay it with part of the cash you receive. If they have a loan on their property, you can assume it or take title subject to the loan. If the house is not one that you want to keep, consider selling it on a one-year lease option. A good strategy is to take title subject to because you will have a plan to pay off their loan in a short time, 1 year or less. If you are contacted by the seller's lender, you can explain that the house is under contract and the new buyers are working on securing financing. It is exactly what a lease option buyer should be doing. They may have a year to close, but they should not wait to qualify for a loan. Set up a meeting with the lender before you agree to sell to them to see what they need to do to qualify for a loan. Unless they have a good chance of getting a new loan, don't sell to them on a lease option. Know how much you will owe in taxes before you sell. Learn about the taxes you will owe as a result of owning and selling real estate before the sale is complete. For more practical information on how to avoid or minimize taxes, Read John T. Reed's excellent book, Aggressive Tax Avoidance for Real Estate Investors, www.johntreed.com. It is a clear explanation of tax-deferred exchanges and installment sales and is a must-read for real estate investors. Chapter 19. Getting Your Houses Free and Clear. Setting your goal for free and clear houses. The first step is to set a goal for the number of free and clear houses that you want to own. Work backward into this goal by first setting an income goal and then asking how many free and clear houses you will need to produce that target income. For example, suppose that the house you would like to buy in your town produces rent in the $1,200 to $1,400 per month range and has operating expenses equal to about 40% of the gross rent. How many houses would you need? One house, rental income $1,200 per month, $14,400 per year. Operating expenses 40%, $5,760 per year. Net income, $8,640 per year. Annual income needed, $50,000. Number of free and clear houses needed, 6. Annual income needed, $100,000. Number of free and clear houses needed, 12. Annual income needed, $150,000. Number of free and clear houses needed, 18. Annual income needed, $200,000. Number of free and clear houses needed, 24. Use real numbers in your town and then make a projection using today's values and income to determine how many houses you will need to earn your desired income. As rents increase with inflation, this income will provide you with the same lifestyle even as consumer prices increase over time. Three plans for getting your houses free and clear. Plan 1. Use the increased cash flow from increasing rents to pay off the debt. How many years will it take you to pay off a 30-year loan? 30 years if you make the same payment each month for 30 years. If you increase the amount of the payment you make as you raise your rents, you can pay off your loans much sooner. As you acquire property with fixed payments, amortizing loans, your cash flow will increase each year as you increase your rents. You can use the increasing cash flow from one house to pay off the debt on that house. If your rents increase at an average of 5% a year, and you use that increase to make additional principal payments on your loan, you can pay off a 30-year loan in just over 14 years. Table 19.1, found in the accompanying PDF, shows what your payment schedule would look like if you applied your increasing rent to your loan each year. The original loan is a 30-year, $150,000 loan with 7% interest and payments of $997.75. Although this is a simple plan and it works, it is not the quickest way to pay off the debt on your houses. A better plan is to use the cash flow that the house produces to continue to buy other houses until you have the number of houses that, if paid for, will produce the cash flow that you need. When you pay off a loan with an interest rate of 7%, you are investing your money at that 7% rate. If you buy another house with a small down payment, the return you will make on your investment during the first few years could be 20 to 40% or higher. You can then use those profits to pay off your loans, and you can pay them off faster. If you make prepayments of principal on any loan, keep careful records of your extra payments. It would be wiser and easier to keep track of if you just made one larger prepayment of principal each year rather than making increased monthly payments. For example, in year 2, rather than making 12 payments of $1,050, you could make one prepayment of $600 at the end of the year. You would pay a few dollars more interest during the year, but the 14-year payoff plan would still work. Bank bookkeepers do make mistakes, and when you make many unusual payments, they may not record them accurately and give you the proper credit. Keep your own records, keep proof of your payments, and make your own amortization schedule by using programs that are widely available. Plan 2. Buy more houses than you really want and sell off some to pay off the rest. Knowing that you can make more than a 7% return when you buy a house as an investment, a better plan is to use the profits that your houses will generate to buy additional houses. This will take more work. Buying and managing more houses requires more of your time and effort, but the results can be spectacular. If, using the same cash flow as in the preceding example, you took the excess cash and bought more houses, here is an example of how the plan would work. Year 1, buy the first house. Years 2 through 10, buy another house each year using the cash flow from the earlier houses to provide down payments and to fund any cash flow shortages in the new houses that you buy. Remember the 10-10-10 rule? Here is an example of how the equity would grow in the first house that you bought if you did a little better than 10-10-10. You will do better as you practice making offers and learn your market. Market value when you bought, $180,000. Your purchase price, $160,000. Your down payment, $10,000. Your loan, $150,000. Using a conservative rate of growth of 5%, let's look at the value and the debt after just 10 years. Projected market value at 5% growth, $320,000. Loan balance in 10 years, $125,920. Equity in property, $194,080. It's hard to project what income tax rates will be in 10 years, but even after taxes, you should be able to sell one house, gross $194,000, pay taxes, and pay off another house that will have a loan balance of about the same, $125,920. Rather than waiting 14 years to pay off a loan using the increased rents, this plan allows you to get a house free and clear in 10 years at a conservative 5% rate of growth. Plan 3. Refinance some property to pay off others. If you follow Plan 2 and continue to buy houses at below market prices and with good financing, you will one day own a number of houses. Each will have a different loan balance and a different payment schedule. Some of these loans will have better interest rates and terms than others. Take the time to carefully study the payments and amounts on all your loans and compare them. Which loans have the largest payments compared with the amount that you owe? Suppose that you owned 3 houses with the following loans. House 1, market value $200,000. Loan amount $100,000. Loan payment $700. House 2, market value $200,000. Loan amount $100,000. Loan payment $900. House 3, market value $200,000, loan amount $100,000, loan payment $1,200. Without knowing the interest rate on the loans, which would you want to pay off first? Obviously, the one with the highest payments. You can invest the same $100,000 and increase your monthly cash flow by paying off the loan with the largest payment. The interest rate is not as important as the ratio between the amount that you owe and the amount of the monthly payment. As loans get older, their balances pay down, but the monthly payments remain the same. House 3 may have started with a $150,000 loan that has been paid down to $100,000. If you are going to refinance one or more properties to pay off another, either refinance or pay off the loans with the highest payments to increase your cash flow. Looking again at the house in the preceding example. Projected market value in 10 years, at 5% growth, $320,000. Loan balance in 10 years, $125,920. Equity in property, $194,080. Banks generally will lend investors 80% of the market value when you refinance a property. If you refinanced this house with a new 80% loan, you would be able to borrow $256,000. If you owned another house with about the same loan balance of $126,000, You could pay off the loans on those two houses by refinancing just one house. Now, you would own one house free and clear and one with an 80% loan. If you can refinance when rates are low, you should be able to cover your payment with the rent that one house produces. Owning a house free and clear and one with an 80% loan is a much safer position than having a $125,000 loan against both houses. When you have a large loan balance, the lender will not want to foreclose and will work with you in the event you have financial difficulties. When you have a small loan balance, the lender will gladly foreclose, confident that they will be repaid. Another advantage is that replacing two old loans with a new 30-year loan will reduce your payment. If you can borrow at a lower interest rate, your payment will drop even more. A third advantage is, because you have not sold a house, you will pay no taxes. Because you have not sold, you still have both houses earning money for you. You can use all three strategies depending on the market, your desire to own a certain number of properties, and your need for cash flow. One thing is certain. You will change your plan if you start today and invest for the next 10 years. You will continue to learn more and will find ways to make even higher returns with your cash. Increasing your profit dramatically with a phone call. Always ask for a discount when paying off any loan. This may seem strange to you, but lenders, especially private lenders and some smaller banks, want their money back sooner. To get it sooner, they will take less than the full face value, but only if you ask them to do so. You must make this offer before they know that they will be paid off. You can ask them this way. I was planning to pay off some of my loans, and yours was one I was considering. Would you be interested in being paid off today rather than over the next 10, use the real remaining loan balance, years? If so, my closing cost to refinance and pay you off would be $4,320. Would you be willing to pay that amount if I paid your loan off now? You receive discounts by asking for them. I owed one seller $10,000 due in less than 1 year. She offered to take a $4,000 discount to get her money 9 months early. It would have been smarter for her to wait the 9 months. Where else could she earn $4,000 on a $6,000 investment in 9 months? I knew that I was going to pay her, but lenders never know that they are going to get paid until the check is cashed. The certainty of money today, rather than waiting for it, is worth a lot. Check with your tax advisor on how to report any discount you are able to negotiate. The amount of the discount probably will be taxable, but if you save $4,000 and owe a tax of $1,000, you are still $3,000 ahead. Being efficient when refinancing. Interest rates and the credit market have cycles. When the rates are low and credit is loose, borrowing money to restructure your existing debt or to finance new purchases can be profitable. When interest rates are high, you don't want to replace a low-interest loan with a high-interest loan. If you are a long-term investor, you can play the cycles. When rates are low, borrow when you can refinance your debt and reduce your payments. It costs less to refinance one house than three houses. If you can, refinance just one with the most equity to get the cash you need to pay off other debt or for other investment. Increasing your income today by spending some of your principal. You can increase your income even more by systematically selling some houses. By talking to my estate attorney friends, I learned that most people who accumulate significant assets during their lifetimes become more conservative as they age and end up with most of these assets in their estates. Unless you have a reason to leave a large estate, you can sell some of your assets and spend or give away the money while you are alive. One of my favorite preachers likes to say, "Do your giving while you're living so you're knowing where it's going." People who discover the joy of giving really get a kick out of making gifts that help others change their lives. Give while you are alive to see how your gift makes a difference. If you supplement your rental income with income from sales of properties, You can meet your financial goals quicker and do it with fewer properties than if you depend only on the rental income. Suppose that at age 60, you own 20 houses, 10 that are free and clear and 10 with amortizing loans. The loans on the 10 financed houses all will be paid off within the next 20 years. Your plan is to produce the greatest possible income during the next 20 years so that you can enjoy those years to their fullest. And then, at age 80, you want to own 10 free and clear properties to support you comfortably for the rest of your life. During the next 20 years, you plan to sell 10 houses to increase your income, keeping the remaining 10 houses for your more passive retirement years. Today, each house is worth about $150,000. Your plan is to sell one every 2 years on average to increase your income by about $75,000 in today's money per year. You can adjust this strategy to get the best prices by selling only in strong real estate markets. Selling will reduce your workload, since you will have fewer tenants and houses to watch over. It will also reduce your rental income over time. This may be offset by increasing rents. Chapter 20. Making It Big on Little Deals. In my classes, I have taught thousands how to buy houses for investment. Many students have made it in a very big way. Some own hundreds of houses. Others have bought a few houses to supplement or replace the income from their jobs. To make money as an investor, you have to take risks. If the risk is small, if it is a little deal, you are more likely to take it. A modestly priced house in a good neighborhood can be an almost risk-free investment if you learn how to buy, finance, and manage it well. You can buy it with a relatively small down payment and rent it to a tenant who will pay you enough to repay your loan. It takes a modest amount of work to find, buy, and rent a house, but the reward is more than worth the work and risk. Those who fail to take this chance, who will not make the effort to buy even a safe investment, run a far greater risk, the risk of never building any wealth. The great majority of people, even in our free and wealthy country, do not build any significant wealth. They must rely on the government, a company pension, or relatives for support. Reduce your risk by learning before you write a check to buy your first investment. Hopefully, this book has answered some of your questions and given you the direction that you need to write that first check and buy that first house. Writing down your plan for building wealth. Commit today to buying at least one house in the coming year. Don't worry about what the market is doing. Look for a house that you can buy using my 10-10-10 rule, and you will own a house that should rent for at least the amount of your payments. You will learn a lot and build some self-confidence in the process. Now, hold on to that house until it doubles in value. If you don't refinance it along the way, your cash flow from that house will increase every year. All you need to do to become wealthy is to repeat the process, to buy one house a year for 10 years, and to hold them until they double in value. See Table 20.1 in the accompanying PDF. If houses in your town double in value every 10 years, Table 20.2, found in the accompanying PDF, shows what your houses will look like in 10 years if the first house you bought was worth $150,000. If they don't double in 10 years, hold them until they do. Your first house will double in value from $150,000 to $300,000, and since you will continue to buy the same type of house in the same neighborhood, all your houses will be worth about $300,000 in 10 years, or however long they take to double. There is nothing complicated about this plan. It simply requires you to stick with it and buy one house a year, and then hold on to those houses until they double in value. These numbers are conservative. As you improve your buying and borrowing skills, you will make deals better than 10-10-10. Secrets of Success. Warren Buffett has made billions of dollars as an investor during my lifetime. He and I agree on most everything, and here I have restated and embellished some of his thoughts for real estate investors. 1. Buy value. Buy investments that have real value and buy them at a bargain price. Buy a house you know the value of and that will produce income, and buy it when you can make a good deal. 2. Hold on to your good investments forever. Don't sell a house that rents well and appreciates. It is making you a lot of money. 3. Sell losers as soon as possible. When you make a mistake, admit it. Recognize why it happened, get rid of it, and learn from the experience. 4. Treat others as you would like to be treated. You can make a lot of money buying, renting, and selling houses without ever making anyone angry. When you treat people well, they will send their friends your way. 5. There is unlimited opportunity to build wealth. Buying houses one at a time and holding them until they at least double in value can build you more wealth than 98% of your friends and neighbors, and it can do it faster than you'd believe. Get outside your comfort zone. Take a small risk on a little deal, and you can make it big. Chapter 21. The Fuller Center for Housing, Helping Others Build Wealth One House at a Time. What the poor need is capital, not charity, co-workers, not caseworkers. Millard Fuller, co-founder, the Fuller Center for Housing and Habitat for Humanity. I met Millard Fuller when he spoke to a group at my church in 1985. Millard was an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. He built a successful business while attending law school and achieved financial independence at an early age. Together, Millard and his wife Linda decided that there is more to life than just making money, and they did something truly remarkable. They gave away all the money they had made and dedicated their lives to helping others. They took this action when they were young adults with 4 young children to raise. They founded Habitat for Humanity in 1976 and the Fuller Center for Housing in 2005. Millard and Linda motivated millions of volunteers to share their wealth and talents to partner with their less fortunate neighbors to help them build their own homes. More than 1 million people live today in these houses, and the building continues. In 1996, Millard received the Presidential Medal of Freedom for revolutionizing the way we look at charity. The Fuller Center for Housing continues the work that Millard and Linda started and has provided an opportunity for me and many others who are fortunate enough to own their own homes to help our hardworking low-income neighbors to build and own their homes. Providing decent housing for the poor in a community dramatically improves that community. Well-housed students perform better in school. Well-housed employees are healthier, happier, and more productive at work. These new homeowners take a great deal of pride in their homes and take good care of them. They become involved in their community and take responsibility. They pay taxes and fight for issues that affect their community. The Fuller Center for Housing is a non-denominational Christian organization that welcomes people of all faiths, or no faith at all, to join in eliminating the blight of poverty housing from our communities. In the richest nation in the world, it should be unacceptable for children to grow up in unhealthy, unsafe housing. Volunteering for the Fuller Center has helped me to understand that each of us can change the world one family at a time. Every home is a life-changing experience both for the families who live in the home and for the volunteers who help to build it. Helping others can be a family adventure. All of my children have raised the money for and built a house for a family in need. Through the Fuller Center's Global Builders Program, you can combine an international family vacation with a volunteer experience that you will always remember. I encourage you to become involved. For current information on the Fuller Center for Housing and how you can get involved in eliminating poverty housing in your town, contact www.fullercenter.org. I hope to see you on a build site one day soon. Contact information for the Fuller Center for Housing, P.O. Box 523, Americus, Georgia 31709, 229-924-2900, www.fullercenter.org. Building Wealth One House at a Time, Updated and Expanded Second Edition, written by John W. Schaub, narrated by Scott R. Pollock. Copyright by John W. Schaub. This audiobook was recorded in arrangement with McGraw-Hill Education and was produced in the year 2019 by Echo Point Books and Media, LLC, which holds the copyright thereto.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.